Hello and welcome to the final episode of The Greenhouse for this season. I'm Prithvin Bilal.
And I'm Anna Snow, and I'm so sorry that I sound like this right now. Seasonal allergies are really kicking my butt this year. But I want to talk about that for a second because, so obviously, we all know that pollen is one of the biggest causes of seasonal allergies, and it's all over the ground, it's everywhere. But that is because of a thing called botanical sexism, in which cities will only plant male trees because female trees are the ones that produce fruits usually, and they don't want to have to clean up the fruits, so they only plant the male trees, but then there's nowhere for the pollen to go, because if you had male and female trees, if you had a nice balance, the pollen would, it would go fertilize the female trees. But cities don't do that, and so the pollen just irritates everybody that lives there.
Because everyone always says too much fruit is a bad thing to have.
I know. I mean, I guess like, I kind of see, but they don't want to go around and clean it up. But I'm like, come on.
They have
on,
to clean up stuff anyway.
Like, you clean up the pollen.
Leaves.
Yeah.
So I hope you feel better. I hope.
Thank you.
I hope our audience will tune in anyway
for the greenhouse. Bear with me.
So coming up on the greenhouse, we're going to talk a little bit about the Colorado River. There's a lot of controversy happening there. Politics are involved, which is my favorite thing to talk about. And people are trying to force each other's hands, and people are refusing to compromise. The usual stuff about the environment, for sure. But first, we were off on maybe one of the biggest holidays for environmentalists around the world. We were off for Earth Day, but we don't want to miss out on discussing all things planet Earth. And we wanted to kind of check in on how we were doing in the world with, like, a look back at our season so far.
Yes.
So, you know, we're going to set up the scene as we usually do. A couple of episodes ago, you may remember we talked about this huge climate report from the UN. The report said that we weren't doing great with the climate and that governments have fallen short of this landmark 2015 Paris Climate Accords. Well, we talked all about the negatives on that episode. So today, we're going to talk a little bit about the positives in honor of this 54th Earth Day that happened last week. We want to say that's not completely the fault of the countries for kind of ignoring the environment. The report kind of indicated that the countries had a lot going on after 2015, including COVID, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, geopolitical tensions between some big polluters like US and China. So they're kind of being cut some slack for, like, not trying to address the climate.
I always thought of COVID actually as kind of helping.
Yeah.
Because there were so many reports after COVID, like when people were staying inside, they were going places and stuff. You know, they talked about how a lot of waterways were clearing up. Like, I remember seeing, like, swans came back to Venice or something. They hadn't, because people weren't boating all the time, and they hadn't had swans in, like, years or something. Like, I think people doing less did, because of COVID, did help. It was a nice cause that came out of a terrible thing, you know?
Yeah, and the air was also really good, I remember. I was in San
Francisco. People were driving so much less.
People were driving less, like, you could see outside in the air, you could see the blue skies. I remember it was the first time that I heard birds in a long time during those early days of COVID, because they just weren't there, and there wasn't a lot of sound. Speaking of, you know, animals, biodiversity, we want to take a quick look back at biodiversity. Not so great. There's a new study out called Biodiversity in Focus, United States edition. It revealed an alarming conclusion. 34% of plants and 40% of animals are at risk of extinction.
Not to mention 41% of ecosystems are at risk of a wide range collapse.
So as we say, that's kind of everything, you know?
Yeah. Those animals are such high percents, too.
I know, and I'm sure there are, like, I'm sure some ecosystems are more likely to collapse than other certain types, but you forget how much in this world we need ecosystems, and we need all of them, and we need balance,
yeah.
So that high percentage is not
That's
great.
Exactly what biodiversity is. It's this balance of all these things, and having, I mean, diversity in, you know, the types of plants and animals and ecosystems, everything like that. So it's like 40% of species of animals are in at risk of extinction. That is crazy.
And underlooked is the plants. I think we were going back to, like, you know, your, what was it called? The botanical sexism?
Yes, botanical sexism.
The plants going away. Each plant kind of has, like, a purpose.
Exactly.
And the only way. There's also, I actually found out this morning, so have you heard of these things called lantern fireflies or lantern flies?
That sounds familiar.
A spotted lantern fly.
Okay.
They're an invasive species, which is something we've talked about. Mm-hmm. They kind of affect plants and animals. And like they feed on them, which gets rid of their nutrients. And the spotted lantern fly eats on 70 different types of plants.
Oh my god.
And they're making a comeback.
Oof.
That's another thing to be look out for. Maybe when we come back next season, because we're gonna see how it affects this like summer farming season. And stuff like that. They came from China in 2014.
How did they get here?
Allegedly through like a shipping crate. Oh. They were just happened to be... They're not very big, and they also reproduce like that, you know? Which is kind of crazy. The weather is another thing turning now. That has not been that great either. If you lived on the West Coast, you probably heard about all those... the record rainfall the West received. If you watch the news at all, you've probably heard of bomb cyclones and atmospheric rivers, you know, those big kind of terms.
Mm-hmm.
It went so well in California and throughout the West Coast that California got taken out of a drought. They were in a drought for a long time, and they are not anymore. Midwest didn't have it too great either. There was severe tornadoes in Alabama and Mississippi. And the East Coast, as Anna knows, they always have their hurricanes.
Uh-huh.
But they've also received, like, record amount of rain. Just a couple weeks ago, Fort Lauderdale, which is, you know...
just, like, 45 minutes from where I live.
A real,
an hour with traffic.
Real city in Florida, like, real prominence. Everyone's heard of Fort Lauderdale.
Mm-hmm.
It's not thrown in somewhere. They had 25.6 inches of rain in 12 hours.
That's crazy. I didn't even know about that until you told me. I'm like, you're telling me about my own state.
It's really bad what happened there. They like shut down their airport, schools were closed, the entire city hall has been gutted.
Oh wow.
So they need a new one. That's what I saw. So there's been a lot of rain, and you know, I think we've always talked about in our shows, like, you know, climate change has been associated with no rain and like very dry kind of dry conditions, but this rain is on the complete other extreme side, and I think it shows the complexity.
Climate change is so much more. That's why I think when I was in elementary school and stuff, we always called it global warming. But I think the reason that the term has changed to climate change is because there's a lot more to it than just the warming of the planet. That is still a factor, but there's a lot more that goes into it and a lot more cause and effects and things like that. But we don't want to be too down and too negative.
There are things trending in the right direction.
We have some things that are looking up. So numbers for the ozone layer just got released by NASA, and the hole in the ozone seems to be decreasing, which is a great thing. The current level in 2022 of the hole is 23.2 million square kilometers.
Which seems like a lot.
That does sound like a lot, but in 2006 it was 27.5. So it has gone down about...
something in that range.
Something about
and
that.
I think the ozone hole is really important. Like, we've talked about the importance of ozone.
Yeah.
Up in the air, at least. It kind of blocks a lot of the radiation that comes from the sun.
Mm-hmm.
And, like...
it's like sunscreen for the planet. That's what they taught me in school.
That's what I remember, too. And it keeps some heat in the planet, but too much ozone traps more than
that's when you get greenhouse gases.
Exactly.
The greenhouse gases trap too much heat.
And it's a problem when it's, like, the ozone is really low.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's up in the air, not a problem.
Exactly.
The reason this has been on the decline and 2022 was, like, a low level is not because of something we did in 2021 or did, like, you know, recently. This has been on track for some time. Because all the way back in 1987, there was something called the Montreal Protocol. This established limits on how much ozone-depleting substances, the things that would create... holes in the ozone, could be released into the atmosphere. So I guess, like, they made a good decision in 1987, and we're seeing the impact of it now.
That's
which kind of shows how long it takes.
That's crazy that something that happened the year my mom graduated high school is having such a big impact today as I'm a college student.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
And it's a trend, but, like, seeing this trend in action, it took such a long time to get there.
Yeah.
Like, 19 years from 1987 to 2006 to make an impact. And that was when, like, you know, things were normal.
Yeah.
Things were not on the extremes. So it'll be, it's just an interesting statistic to note.
And another, I mean, I guess just fun fact, that Montreal Protocol that was passed in 1987, it is the only treaty in the history of the UN that all countries ratified, that they all voted yes.
And that is a really crazy thing, because the UN, like, whenever we are researching something for our show, whenever there's something like the UN said this, we're like, oh my god, that's research gold, because the UN is so reputable. This is the only thing that has happened. And, you know, locally in Arizona, there's some positive signs as well. Lake Mead and Lake Powell, they're set to rise more than 33 feet of, like, overall reservoir level due to the rain that California has received, and we've received throughout the Southwest.
We received a lot more rain this season than past years. Now, I didn't grow up here. I'm not from here, but I'm in my third year of college, so this is my third winter season spent here. And we definitely had more rain this year than the past 2 years. And I know I complained about it being cold longer this year, but I think we needed it. I think we needed
beneficial.
That rain, yes.
Especially because it's really hot now.
It's, yes, warming up very much now.
And we may be seeing even more of it because the rain here has been good and we're seeing it immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to see like it for a long time because snowpack levels are going to melt into the summer months. So it's going to just keep on coming. The Grand Canyon is set to release a lot of water. This is a ton of water. They're going to release more than 295,480 gallons of water a second.
A second?
For 3 days. Because that's how much water they have. It's going to fill up beaches. So if you want to go check out the Grand Canyon beaches, they're not going
to
have water.
All right, everyone. We're planning a trip to the Grand Canyon beaches.
Come with us.
Come with us. Greenhouse field trip.
Yeah.
As of April of 2023, the amount of water flowing into Lake Powell is 177% of the usual average intake, which is crazy.
That's great.
Yes. According to the release from the United States Bureau, I can read, of reclamation, experts say that it could raise the lake level by 50 feet, which is a lot.
That's great. And you know that we're on low levels of Lake Mead and Lake Powell.
Yes.
So this is all great to see. Coming up next, could be rising 50 feet, but is that enough for the Colorado River? Next, we're going to detail all the drama with the cuts that's coming up between the seven states and Mexico and indigenous tribes that use resources from the Colorado River. Stay with us. You're listening to The Greenhouse. Welcome back to The Greenhouse on Blaze Radio and blazeradioonline.com. It's our season finale. I'm Brendan Blal.
I'm Anna Snow.
So we just discussed, you know, signs that are looking up for Lake Mead and Lake Powell from the Colorado River. They get all their water from there. But there's still controversy because they're at, right now, low levels.
Yes.
Colorado River is huge, as we know. Colorado River serves 40 million Americans.
That's so many. And we haven't talked about this in a little while. We have talked about the Colorado River before, but we don't want to be too repetitive.
Exactly.
You know, so, but it is always something, there's always something to talk about with this, especially living in Arizona, in the desert, you know. Everyone knows that Arizona gets its water mostly from the Colorado River.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to break down exactly how much. So 36% of the state's water comes from the Colorado River.
Yes.
41% comes from groundwater. 18% comes from state rivers, and 5% comes from reclaimed waters. And those numbers all come from the Arizona Department of Water Resources.
Now, if you're not from Arizona, and it may not matter to you much on the West Coast how much water these seven West Coast states get, think again, because 72% of the water goes for agriculture in Arizona, things that get shipped out across the United States. Arizona is known for its leafy greens, cabbage, and dates, many fruits, just to name a few. The Arizona Department of Agriculture says there are more than 510,000 irrigation acres in Arizona, and they use 2.5 million acre feet of water. And acre feet is a lot that we've discussed already. And 2.5 million of those,
It's crazy to me how much agriculture happens in Arizona, because you would think you would want to grow stuff in places that already have lots of water. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That they pump in so much water for all these plants and
but
stuff.
But I think, you know, you can move water, but you can't move the sun.
That's true. And it you can grow things year-round here that other places you can only grow in, let's say, the summertime because of how cold it gets other places in the winter. So I guess it does make sense, but...
Yeah, and besides Texas and Florida, Arizona is one of the lower places you can go, longitude-wise, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you go farther north in Arizona, obviously if you go up to Flagstaff, up into the mountains, it's higher, but we're in the valley, yeah. Which is lower.
One thing that Arizona takes pride in is the way it has used their water. So everyone knows that Arizona's population has expanded. The joke is after COVID, a lot of people moved here. Mm-hmm. But that's not true. It's been expanding for a long time, since the 1980s.
New York Times says that Phoenix is the fastest growing city in the United States.
And they love saying that.
They love to use that fact. New York Times said it once, and Arizona made it their whole personality.
Exactly. So in the 1980s, Arizona used 10.5 million acres of water. Last measured in 2019, that number is now 7 million million acres of water. But here's the thing. The number of people has increased from 1.5 million in the state to 7.5 million in
that's
the state.
That's crazy.
So at least efficiency is improving, and that's kind
definitely.
Of a big thing to think about, especially when you're comparing stuff.
Mm-hmm. I know, that's a crazy that we're using less water, but have that many more people.
Yeah.
But
that may not be enough. Even amongst all this efficiency, we may have to get even better. Because as we alluded to in our last episode, because it happened as we were going, the Biden administration is currently thinking about cutting even more water allocation between California, Mexico, Arizona, and other Western states. So we kind of wanted to break down the negotiations that happened to get to this point and, like, solutions that were attempted to reach. And spoiler alert, it's kind of like every state was trying to do what was best for themselves.
Yes. And so here's how that story goes. The Biden administration asked states to reduce Colorado River water usage. In February, the states had to reach an agreement on how to use water from the Colorado River. Six states agreed to cut down by 2 million acres of water, but the biggest user, California, did not agree to this plan, and that's because, obviously, California would have to cut their water usage the most because they're using the most.
Exactly. And they believe that they didn't have to, so this 2 million acres of water was going to get cut totally, and it was going to be, like, divided based on, like, population. California would be affected the most. And here's something that they argued, which I found really interesting. Water experts say that the way water works is based on seniority rights.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, first come, first serve. And California was first. So they believed that they had the most entitled from the Colorado River. And that if water did have to be cut, it should get cut from the states that got there last, because they did get there last. California eventually came around on something. They proposed an alternative where they would cut down 400,000 acres. And that is vastly different than the 2 million.
I was going to say, that's less than a quarter of what, you know what I mean?
Like,
they're like trying to negotiate, but they really lowball right there.
Exactly. So there, no one kind of wants to make a budge because everyone kind of wants to keep the water for themselves.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. You need water. You want water for your citizens, but you got to do something. You got to compromise somewhere. And 400,000 compared to the 2 million, like, they couldn't even meet in the middle and say, like, 1 million or something. You know what I mean? No, 400,000? Really? Really, California? I know you're from California.
Exactly. I know. It's unfortunate because the reason they're citing it is because we got there first. If there was a reason, you know?
I don't really feel like that fully
but now
makes
that,
sense.
Now that California is out of a drought, maybe there's something there.
Maybe,
parts
maybe,
of California is out
there. Parts of California, maybe because they've gotten enough rain now that maybe,
So no one really wants to make a decision. No one wants to sacrifice their position. So the Biden administration is stepping in. They're thinking about doing something. So they haven't officially done anything yet, but they're thinking about it, and they've offered a couple of options. So let's see what happens. One thing is, there could be reductions based on senior water rights, which is what California is arguing. The states that were last included in the Colorado River plan would have their water greatly reduced. That's not great for Arizona because they were one of the later states to
hop in
on this
one. Aren't we the 47th state?
Well, it's not necessarily like states like out of the 50.
Okay.
It's like who signed an agreement
It. I thought California was like, we were a state first, so we get more.
Either way, California somehow got there first. It's really big because one aqueduct that carries water from Phoenix to Tucson would have their water almost completely taken away. So imagine our friends down at U of A not having
water. You don't get any water. They're wildcats, but they say bear down, which that doesn't make sense to me.
Another plan would be taking away water equally from the states, which is what the six states kind of proposed.
Yeah.
That same NYT New York Times article that we're referring to earlier says about 13% more than what each state already agreed to would be taken away. So the 2 million acres plus 13% more of that.
Oh, wow.
And just, you know, for context, Arizona this year already agreed to give away more than 20% of its water delivery for the year.
But I worry about how this, you know, would impact, like how it would impact citizens here, particularly indigenous tribes, which already get, like, the least amount of water.
Because who's there to negotiate for them?
Exactly.
Like, officially, there's someone. Like, I think government officials say they're going to look out for them. Like, there's
they always say that, and then they don't.
But it's easier to get them. And, you know, even Mexico gets it from the Colorado River could also be left out of this.
Totally. I didn't even think of that Mexico gets so much water, and because they're another country, they're not going to agree to our...
Mexico probably historically gets at least because, like, it probably drains down.
By the time it gets down that
so
far
little.
South, there's less water, but... Still,
We wrote this a little while ago, and then we found out about all this, like, new water coming in from the snowfall.
Yeah.
So maybe it's not as bad as people think, but this is a one-time, like, snowfall, likely, and, like, water coming in. But this problem will happen again. So it's, like, a good idea to have, like, a solution, and this is so big because it will set a precedent. Because no one's ever had to come in and, like, say, all right, all of you have to give up water or nothing.
Yeah.
And it's a really tough decision. The day we're filming this, Biden announced that he is running for president again in 2024.
Man is already 80. He's going to be 81 this year.
And he's being really cautious about what he does because two states that would be affected by Colorado River, Nevada and Arizona, are swing states, which means Biden has the chance of winning it.
So he doesn't want to do anything that's going to make the people here mad.
Exactly, because he needs their votes come 2 years' time.
Yeah.
So he could wait till after 2024, but that be...
It'd
2025, right? So it's a political problem. It's something that people often forget about.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how much, you know, I would think, at least, maybe not other people, that the planet shouldn't be that controversial. It shouldn't be that politicized. Like, everyone should want to protect nature for the future generations and stuff like that. But no, it's so political.
And even if you want to take it in a selfish way, provides something to drink, provides electricity too. Lake Mead and Lake Powell generate tons of electricity. And there's something called a dead zone, which, like, limits how much, like, you need to have a certain level of water in there to, like, generate force to spin your turbines and get electricity.
That makes sense.
And we're bordering on that dead zone.
Ooh.
So not only could we run out of water, we could run out of, like, the important electricity that is produced. They produce enough electricity for 5.8 million people across Nevada, these, like, dams. So it's just something to think about. And hopefully something happens. I don't think anything's going to change, though, by the time we get back in September.
Probably not.
Thanks for joining us on this season finale of The Greenhouse. Today we discussed, you know, we looked back on all things in honor of Earth Day on the season. And we also talked about the way Lake Mead and Lake Powell are recovering.
Yes. I'm Anna Snow. Thanks for tuning in all season long.
And I'm Brenton Blall. Thanks for listening for All Things Planet Earth. Have a good day. Bye.